Hello and welcome to The Loudspeaker, your definitive guide on how to scale your startup.
This first tip for every fintech startup is,
what are the media and press saying about us? How are we being perceived by these people?
PR stunts are any activities that allow you to engage with the audience.
I don't agree with the fact that all publicity is good publicity.
Here is where we talk to communications professionals from all around the world to let you know what are the best practices and cool ideas that you can implement for your startups. Bruce, would you be able to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Great to be here. My name is Bruce Hogan. I'm CEO of Software Pundit. Software Pundit is a technology research firm that's here to help SMBs successfully adopt technology. So if you think about trying to find the best software for you, it can be a challenging process, especially with so many options out there today. We have a team of analysts at Software Pundit that researches different software markets and publishes the most in-depth reviews on the internet that you'll find. So you can stop by Software Pundit to read that. Previously, and relevant to the conversation today, I was at a large e-commerce marketplace called Teachers Pay Teachers, where we built out the email channel from scratch, basically to sending over 500 million emails a year in about 5 years. Looking forward to sharing some details about that experience today.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm super happy to have you on because other than a previous email marketing for beginners call that we had earlier this month, I don't have much experience in this. So I'm super glad I got you here because I got a lot of questions. And the first one I want to know is, what separates an advanced email marketer or marketeer, I suppose, and a novice email marketeer in your opinion?
Yeah, so I think if I was thinking about the difference between novice and advanced email, an email marketer or an email program, there's kind of five components that tend to change as you scale. So those would be your data and the amount of data you have to handle, the software application that you're typically using to send emails, the campaigns, the variety of number of campaigns you have to build, test, and scale, the reporting and how you track your data, and then finally, your team. Right, probably going from, you know, do it yourself part-time operation to having a team of different skill sets that are managing the channel. So I would break down those components, but generally you can think about the difference between spending part of your time sending a newsletter once a week and having a forgot password email and a transaction confirmation email to an email program where there's dozens or even hundreds of different email campaigns that are automatically firing off at any given point to any customer, and it can get pretty messy, right? So you have to figure out how to wrap your head around that and build an operation that can handle that, but also keeping in mind each customer's experience with your business. And so that's where it can become challenging.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that getting messy. And I use this as an example on the first episode that we did on this, but there's a show that I love. And the Ricky Gervais show came out like 10 years ago. And there's a character on there. Mm-hmm. And he got a letter. His name's Carl Pilkington. And he received a letter saying, Dear Mr. Dilkington. So they got his name wrong. You're one of our most treasured customers. And I think that really stuck with me because it shows that if you screw something up in an email or a message, mm-hmm. and it's not personalized, then you can lose someone and you can potentially lose a customer for life. So I definitely can see that the stakes are pretty high, but also the chances of getting someone in and getting new clientele, new customers is also very high.
I think of those five that I mentioned, the one that's probably most overlooked is the data side and having clean data that's complete and that is ready. So when you're sending off those types of transactional messages or trigger messages, and it's not possible to look at every single one. So having a clean and complete data set is really critical as the channel scales. And so if you don't start with that, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot, similar to what you said. There's, you know, a really well-personalized email, I think, gains you a lot of points with your customer. But something that tries to be personalized and fails is so obvious today that I think you actually lose more than you gain. So if there's one of those five, I would say, is worth spending time understanding it's really thinking about your data and how you're going to build a clean, complete, and available data set.
Awesome. And yeah, I really want to get into how you can keep it personalized while staying so large scale later on. But beforehand, I do want to ask you, and I never really considered this before the show, but like, is a dedicated IP essential, and how can a person set one up if that is?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's definitely something you start to consider as you move into more advanced email marketing. Your IP address is basically the address, the internet address that your emails are sent from. And like many other things, it builds a reputation over time. So if you're just using, let's say, the basic plan on MailChimp or Constant Contact, you're using a shared IP address. So MailChimp has one, they manage it. Probably 10,000 customers use the same IP address. If you're not sending a high volume of emails, that's probably fine. You can trust that. But when you get to the point where your email channel is generating, I don't know, let's call it hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in sales, and you're starting to send millions of emails, it's probably a good idea to get a dedicated IP rather than using shared, for two reasons. The first is it gives you more control. And so you're not going to be impacted if someone else on the shared IP, sends spammy email, but you're still going to reach inboxes. And then secondly, and related, you can work on deliverability yourself. So working on making sure you have the right security on your email when your emails are being sent, cleaning your email list, things like that can help increase your deliverability rate. So I would say when you get into the hundreds of thousands of revenue or millions of emails, then it's probably worth getting a dedicated IP. It's actually not super complicated if you're working with more advanced email software provider, ESP, they'll do this all the time for you. So there's a warm-up period that you go through that's usually a couple months just to build a reputation for the IP. And then it kind of just works behind the scenes. And the email tool should be doing most of those best practices that I mentioned to make sure that your IP stays in high regard from the inboxes like Gmail and Yahoo and Outlook and things like that.
If you're interested in seeing how Publicize can grow your startup, sign up for a free PR assessment on our website. And for a limited time only, exclusively for the Loudspeaker listeners, you can receive an SEO assessment as part of your package for any tier of service at no extra charge with this special promotion. To find out more, visit publicize.co/lspromo. Now, you mentioned email service providers. I think you use the acronym ESP as well. What would you recommend in this space? Like, who are the main players that you like or you think are the best? And what kind of prices are they charging?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's going to be your primary application that you're using. And there certainly is a difference between more basic systems, like a campaign monitor, a MailChimp, or a MadMimi, and then the more advanced ones that can do the things you need to do as an advanced marketer, although they are getting closer. And those, the top of the line kind of basic systems are becoming, really great. But on the enterprise side, I think the first thing is you want to think about is it, am I running a B2B or a B2C operation? Because your ESPs are going to function differently depending on if you're more of a business to business, you have a product you're selling, there's a long sales cycle. You have to think about things like lead capture, lead nurture, lead scoring. That's a different set of features and needs than if you're B2C, where maybe you're just running a e-commerce marketplace. There's not really lead time or lead scoring or sales cycle or sales organization you're selling to individuals. The B2B systems tend to have some of those features I mentioned. B2C systems are better at sending a ton of volume. B2C, you tend to have millions of customers instead of perhaps like dozens or hundreds or thousands on the B2B side. I think that's the first thing I would consider. Do I need a B2B or a B2C system? Because they're going to look very different. And then within that, there tend to be in a lot of software markets, kind of the tried and true bigger players that have been around forever. So on the B2C side, you're talking about ExactTarget, which Salesforce bought, and now Salesforce Marketing Cloud. Oracle bought Responsys. Those are the two that have been around since 2000, probably used by a lot of Fortune 500 companies, things like that. And then there's newer companies that are a little bit easier to work with. And particularly, you know, if you're a newer business, your startup, if you're great with data and you're using modern practices to move data around your organization, then there's some new players that at this point do have enough traction where I think they're very trustworthy. You could see them raising rounds of like a couple hundred bucks recently. Iterable is one. Klaviyo just raised some money. Simon Data is another one. I would say the difference between the older systems and the newer ones, the newer generation, is how they ingest your data. And probably if you have like a data engineer and you take them to look at exact target and responses, the old tools, and how data moves between your systems and that system, and then you show them the newer ones, they're gonna definitely be a fan of the newer generation of systems. In terms of cost, it is pretty expensive software. The pricing model, the way that the systems are priced, typically is there's a platform fee. It's usually, I don't know, it's called like $10,000 to $20,000 a year, and then you pay per email. So typically it's per 1,000 emails. You'll see something in the 20 to 60 cents range. So if you're sending, say, 300-400 million emails, you can expect to be spending $150,000 to $200,000 a year overall for the email system. The one thing that I would keep in mind is that you can negotiate pretty aggressively. I've been in some negotiations myself for systems around that price point. And because software is so high margin, you can be pretty aggressive and bring the price down. So I certainly wouldn't take the first offer that you get.
That's cool. That's a really good piece of advice, because I'm sure there are some people like myself, I never would have considered that you can just really go in hard negotiating with a software company like this. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, with those margins, I'm pretty sure that they can take a little bit of a hit just to get you on as a customer. Now,
yeah, I mean, they charge per email sent, and it's not like it really costs them that much more to send another email. That's just a wonderful pricing model for them. So as you scale, you have to pay them more. You know, so I think.
Yeah, but that's a good problem to have, really, I guess.
Definitely.
But talking about scaling, and now I'd love to know a bit like more about how should an email channel develop over time?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the goal at the end is to get to a point where you're sending lots of triggered emails, you know what your campaigns are, you've tested them, they're creating like a really cohesive, great customer experience that's an extension of your core product. But, you know, it takes time to get there like most other things. The way that I've always thought about approaching it is start with the basic emails. There's some things that are no-brainers. You know, you need a forgot password email, forgot username email. You need transaction confirmation. You probably want to send some type of like a regular update. People, you know, call that a newsletter. But over time, I think the higher value emails tend to be trigger emails is what they're called, which would be a bulk email would be it's Sunday, so we're going to send a newsletter because we decided it's what we want to do. A trigger email would be the customer did something. The customer, like a abandoned cart email, is a really common example of a triggered email. So the goal, and those triggered emails tend to do better because they're driven by the customer, right? The customer did something, and so then you're offering back a relevant response. So I think the way to think about it would be start with the no-brainers and get used to operating the channel. And then over time, you know, maybe each quarter you can test 1 to 3 new campaigns. So create, you know, mock-up of the emails, figure out what your key metrics are. You want to run an A/B test on the email in most cases, validate, you know, how much value it's creating for your customer, and look at, you know, revenue per email, look at unsubscribe rates, other key metrics. Basically, then you go through this iteration of validating different campaigns and then scaling them. And then you just layer them on over time. And it takes a little while at first, but, you know, eventually you'll get to a point where you have, you know, dozens of different campaigns that are segmented that you understand really well. I think that's how I would think about scaling it from a campaign perspective.
That makes absolute sense. And now this is the last question that I have for you. And I really want to get back to it because it's something we discussed earlier. Like, how is it possible to deliver email marketing on a large scale and still keep it personalized?
Yeah, personalization, I think, is one of those buzzwords that's just been around for a long time. I think really large organizations could have pulled it off probably 5-10 years ago. Now it is possible for small organizations to do that. I think the most important thing, like I mentioned, is you have to have a clean data. That's the data is the foundation. That's got to be clean. It's got to be complete, right? Or you've got to be able to know, these are the customers where I don't have a first name field, or, you know, you have a first name for everybody. You know, and your data is up to date. It's, you know, even if, let's say, you're sending out a product recommendation email and a certain customer just bought the product you were going to recommend, if you haven't updated your data, you run the risk then of sending that customer, suggesting them they buy something they just bought from you earlier that day, right? And it just completely backfires. So the data is so critical. And then the next thing would be the applications that you use. So some of these more modern applications make it possible with, you know, dynamic content and inserting variables that will allow you to personalize at scale. The other thing is you can create as many personalized campaigns as you want, but really it's about more than just personalizing the emails, about personalizing the experience and creating a valuable personalized experience. And so that's where it also will take time. You have to test many different campaigns and figure out not just what's the best personalized email, but how can email create the best personalized experience for my customers? So I certainly would keep that in mind as you go about it.
Yeah, and I suppose that's where the beauty of A/B testing comes into all of this. And that's why it's been like such a key theme for us this month, A/B testing in our marketing. But those are all my questions as it stands. And Bruce, if anyone's listening and they want to get in touch with you or keep up with what you're doing, what's their best way of doing that?
Yeah, they could visit us at Software Pundit. We have info@softwarepundit would be an email there. You can follow us on Twitter. We also are on Facebook. So those are some good options.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today, Bruce.
Great talking with you. Thanks for having me.